Reed. How are you?
Hey, we're doing great, and it's great to have you here this evening with us, Kim. We're excited about talking about your work as we roll into the program. And the first thing I'd like to do, as we're waiting for the network feed, is just to update everybody on the fact that we live in a changing world. And many of you, like myself, are probably experiencing a
hello to everyone on the Paranormal Web Network. Hello to everyone in Pal Talk. Glad to hear you all, see you all tonight. I'll be in there in just a minute. I got to get my Pal Chat going. So, but I wanted to say real quick also, last on your news agency update that you did, we talked about the platform type of UFOs that come in. And my daughter actually had an experience when she was 17 with that, where she was really afraid, and one night she was actually crying in her sleep, and I went up to go see what was wrong with her, and she told me all she could really say was that, and she pointed up into the sky, and it was one of those white, red, green flashing type of things. I don't know what to call it, UFOs, I guess. And then the other night, just a week ago, while we were here, we were sitting outside, actually, we had just moved into the house, and of course we're watching the planes in the sky, right? Well, this one flies in and stops, and then just kind of elevates up with the way the rotation goes with the earth, and it stayed there for a good 3 hours. And so that was unusual, that it comes flying in and stops. That doesn't happen. And so this is happening. And then last night we're sitting out here and watching all sorts of high flyers do all sorts of maneuvers out here, back and forth, up and down. So they're here, and I see them more now, of course, now that we're away from all the light pollution in Houston. So be on the look for those, and if anyone can catch that on tape or video from beginning to end, let us know.
Yeah, Kim, what Sherry's referring to is that from all over the world, we're getting reports that people are seeing these red and green and white flashing objects that are George Green has described them as observation platforms. Are you familiar at all with any of the ongoings of those kind of objects?
Are you talking about they're rectangular and they're very narrow and the lights are on the perimeter, or is this just lighting?
Yeah, these are
shaped to the craft
that people are reporting all from all over the world. They seem to be around the cities and the countryside as well. And basically, they're kind of hard to distinguish what they actually look like. They're most easily observed by the fact that the lights are there. And they seem to do very, very strange things. Well, let's get right into our show now and get a chance to interview this amazing person, Kim, who has had a very interesting life, and she is
a
person.
Giving me a big head here.
Oh, not really. I've had a lot of fun looking at your website and looking at many of your outstanding pictures. Kim is not only an author and a writer; she's also an outstanding world class photographer. Kim, why don't you take a few minutes and just tell the guests a little bit about yourself, the kind of things you've done, and then let's talk about this new work of art you produce that's actually in color, which is amazing in the days when so many people are self-publishing and they're looking at every angle to cut the costs, and you go ahead and you produce something that's just first class. So Just tell us a bit about
I don't know where to start with what I've done. I've had a really full and interesting life. If anybody knows my story at all, I was the first woman in a cameraman's union in Hollywood and I was working on the television series Baywatch and living on the beach in Malibu. And, you know, life was grand, and I had a sighting that changed my life forever. So, you know, between, I think my first sighting was in 1988. I was home. I was on a beach, and a large sphere that looked like the moon was hovering over the horizon on the coast. And as I observed it, I thought, you know, it's too low to be a star, and it's too high to be a boat. And as I was trying to figure out what it was, this thing shot across the horizon, you know, at breathtaking speed, and it was obviously something, you know, that I'd never seen and was from out of this world. And my boyfriend was asleep behind me, and I thought, if I get up and I wake him up, it's going to be gone by the time I get back. So I sat there and I looked at this object for a long time, and as if it responded to my thoughts, it shot up to the beach, and it hovered over the beach in front of my window. And I'd say it was about 50 feet in diameter, a white moon. And I thought I saw the silhouette of two beings inside of the sphere.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sitting, you know, with my feet in the window, looking out over, you know, the Pacific Ocean, thinking, I don't know what to do. Once again, if I get up to wake up my boyfriend, it'll probably be gone if it can move at the rate that it got to me. So after a few minutes, it, you know, it shot off at an angle into the stars and disappeared. And about a week later, I woke up into what I thought was an elevator that opened into a large room that was filled with human beings and aliens. And at that point in my life, I was working. I had just graduated from the Art Center College of Design. I was, you know, at the height of my career. I had a great relationship, and life was wonderful. And waking up inside the craft kind of changed everything for me at that point. So I didn't know anything about alien abduction. I'd never heard the word. And I had a couple of people that were close to me noticed that I was, you know, different. And they said, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, you look terrible. And I said, well, I've had this dream. You know, and I just posed it as a dream because it happened in the middle of the night. And this producer I was working with at the time said, Kimberly, that's called alien abduction. I said, what are you talking about? And he said, I know all about it because it happened to my roommate. And I said, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. And he said, no, it's not crazy. And he goes, we're going to shut down the production, and I'm going to take you to the Bodhi Tree bookstore in L.A., and I'm going to get you some information that's going to help you through this. So there weren't very many books on the market at that time. I think I remember Missing Time and Communion. Thank God for those men and their work. I read Missing Time, and I think I wrote Bud Hawkins a 10-page letter saying, this is what's happened to me, and oh my God. So I went on to document I kept diary entries. These occurrences went on and on for years, and about 7 years into the abduction phenomenon for me, I decided it was time to talk about it, and I talked and talked and talked and talked. I did radio shows and television shows, and one day I just got tired of talking, and I said, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to write a book, and I'm going to put this book out there, and I'm going to let it speak for me because I need to get back to my normal life. So that's when I wrote Beyond My Wildest Dreams, Diary of a UFO Abductee. And being an artist and a photographer, I wanted the book to be visual. So one of my best friends, Daryl Anka, who's a very, very talented art director and artist and producer, on and on and on, helped me illustrate the book. So when the book was published, everybody who saw the book loved it. They loved the illustrations. And, you know, at the end of the book, I thought, well, I'm going to put an invitation for other people who've had experiences to submit their experiences to me with art. And I'll do a second book that is like my first book, but it will be of other people's encounters. That was back in 1995. So life took a change. I sort of dropped out for a while. I wanted, like I said, to try to get my normal life back. But I did have a box full of beautiful images that people had sent to me and all their stories, and they meant so much to me. But I didn't have enough to fill a book. And I've moved, you know, a dozen times since then. But I kept that book, thinking that one day, I would finish that book. And I guess it seems like 10 years ago now, but I'm sure it was only about a year ago, I decided to go on Facebook. And when I did, I made no mention of my book, my experiences. I just went on as Kim Carlsberg, the photographer. And I started receiving all these beautiful emails from people. "You're Kim. You wrote Beyond My Wildest Dreams. You changed my life. Thank you so much." And I was so humbled that I couldn't hold out. And I said, okay, you guys, you found me. And then I found myself in the middle of this amazing community of people that were like me. And I think Facebook is one of the greatest things that ever happened. So at that point, I said, this is it. This is how I finished the book. They're all right here. Everybody's with me in my computer. So put out an invitation, and I got such a wonderful response, and the book is just absolutely incredible. It's 150 individual images and stories of every kind of close encounter you can imagine. So there you go, The Art of Close Encounters.
Well, that's an amazing amazing story. And tell everybody your website address, Kim, and how they can find out more about your book.
The name of the book is The Art of Close Encounters, and my website is closeencounterspublishing.com. So either way, you can type in theartofcloseencounters.com, and it will get you to my website. So I decided... a very wonderful man who wanted to do the book. And then I started getting messages from people that I told by Richard Bowen because he was self-publishing, and he said he'd give me any kind of information that would help me. But then I realized, you know, he was doing a black and white book. And what I had on was 350 pages of four color, you know, brilliant color, and it was an art book and very, very expensive to print. So I decided, you know, it was a very difficult decision to self-publish. I was ready to go with a publisher, and then so many people told me not to. I thought the gods were trying to tell me something. And then one synchronicity after another led me to just one day someone said, "I will back you." And so I got the money to do the book. Of course, I had to do it in China because of the cost of the color. And that's been interesting because China is on the opposite time. You know, they're 9 o'clock their morning is 9 o'clock my night. So I spent the last, I don't know, 4 months up all night with China trying to get the colors done. But it is printed. So that's all that matters. And pretty soon it's going to be here. It's on a boat, and it shall arrive in Long Beach Harbor on the 1st. And,
yeah, what an exciting time.
That'll be a great thing.
Yeah, mission accomplished, huh?
Yes, and so I have to tell the listeners. I said I have to tell the listeners that when you contacted me, or when Leslie contacted me yesterday, I didn't know who you were. So I was having dinner last night, and I thought, Robert Miles, I know that name. And while I'm sitting there alone having dinner, I realized you're in my book.
Yeah, I sure am. Yeah.
You are in my book. And this is what...
Yeah. I'm very honored to be in your book.
And what a beautiful image you have, and what an amazing story you have. And you can imagine, Robert, with all the stories are like yours. So, and you know you have an amazing story. I mean, what, you were on a boat, and a beautiful ET appeared to you and took you off and to some kind of council, right?
Exactly, yeah. And you know, it's one of those things that it helps me understand the driving ambition and all the energy it took for you to produce what you did, because of course my experience drastically changed my life as well. I'm very much a changed person as a result of my encounter. And people like to say, well, you were abducted, but I actually went willingly. Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know, and that's one of my dreams for this book was I wanted it to be a visual encyclopedia, a visual, you know, reference for contact. And my story was an abduction story. It's only one tiny story in a huge universe filled with, incredibly different beings. And, you know, there are many, many different species here, and they all have their own reasons for being here, and they have their own relationships, and their different ways of dealing with us. And, abduction is just a very small part of it. Half of the book is so joyful, it brings you to tears, with all the different species. So, you know, what I did is I took the first chapter of the book, I was in contact with two brilliant artists, David W. Chase and a woman named Kassara, and I call this the forensic art. And what it is, it's a compilation of the different types of aliens that are most seen and experienced. And of course, there's no way you could get them all in here, but it's a nice, you know, reference to, you know, some of the different species. And then once I got through that, I started with sightings, because of course that's probably the most common, you know, part of the UFO phenomenon. And so my different chapters, I have a chapter on abduction, dreams, contact, inspired encounter art. It's a wonderful chapter because there are people who are very, very interested in the subject who don't have conscious memory of an encounter or a sighting, but are passionate about it and have done beautiful, beautiful images. One of my favorites, being from the coast, living on the coast most of my life, is an alien surfing. It's just, it is wonderful. And I have psychic encounters because, you know, a lot of it is strictly telepathic. And when I got to the end of the book, I wanted to include all the types of encounters that were not ET, because you really never know when they cross over. Because a lot of people see, you know, ghosts, and it could be going through a wall, and it could be a gray, or just, you know, vice versa. I have my own experience with, a Bigfoot, and it was, I'll call it an interdimensional experience. So there's nothing to say that Bigfoot couldn't be considered an ET as well, an interdimensional extraterrestrial. So I've got just about every kind of encounter that I could come up with. And
it must have been an amazing journey just to go through and select the different people's stories that you were going to use, because that it must have been a deluge from the way you described it. How did you do that? How did you make the decisions on on who you were going to put in and what you were going to put in?
Most of it was intuitive, and I just, you know, I wanted the book to represent everything. Of course, it can't represent everything, but I just took the best of that particular subject and that particular type of experience that was the best story and the best illustration combined. And that was difficult, and it's heartbreaking when people, you know, they submit their stories and they didn't get in the book. You know, I'm such a softie. I wanted to include everybody. But, you know, at 350 pages, the book's already 3.5 pounds.
Wow.
So.
It's amazing. You must have put it on heavy stock. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And like you know, I said, one of the major challenges was I didn't know it at the time, but because of the subject matter, I really wanted black pages. It just called for it. The book called for that nice black framing, and it was so difficult for the printer to work through my request for this black. But we finally came to an agreement on how to do it. And I had to redo the book several times in order to accommodate it, but it was well worth it. I'm glad I fought for the black pages.
Well, you know, that's the artistic side of you, certainly, that that wanted to reach that level of quality. And I'm sure it'll be a treasured coffee table edition for people out there. Did it seem like to you, as you were interacting with these people, that they had reached some kind of a catharsis as a result of their experience, or did many of them still have trauma, and were they still coping with the effects of this in their lives?
That's interesting. I think most of the people in the book had come to a comfort level with what had happened to them or what was happening to them. Maybe just a couple of stories, people were still confused or unsure of what it was. But by and large, people are getting it. You know, they understand what's going on. You know, a lot more than, oh my goodness, you know, 15 years ago when I wrote my first book. It's a completely different world, you know, due to the internet and how we can share information. And I'd say most people are pretty okay with it.
Well, in your own case, you said this experience continued on with you for years and years. Can you draw a conclusion for the audience out there what that experience was all about? I mean, why were you picked?
Sure.
Okay, tell me about that. Tell our audience about that.
Well, you know, I've come to the conclusion that I never called my experiences negative. I called them terrifying. And strange and bizarre, and you know, a lot of words that might sound negative, but I really never made a judgment about it because I didn't understand it for a long time. You can't judge something you don't understand. I can say that my experiences were physically painful. They were emotionally disturbing. But after years of research and trying to understand what was going on, I came to the conclusion that, you know, the Greys are no different than any of us. That they do what they do, and I don't think that they have. I think their agenda is a positive one, if I'm going to use positive and negative. I don't think they understand what, you know, they put us through. You know, so many times it's just compared to, you know, how we treat animals in the wild when we tag animals and we're doing it for their own good and we're trying to understand, you know, the negative impact of what's going on in their environment and how they're dealing with it. So, you know, we tag our animals and we track them and we study them, and, you know, the grays are the grays, and I just say the grays in general because most people know the grays. But I think that's, you know, their agenda. I personally believe they've probably been here forever. I think, you know, most people who study it say that they realize that it's most likely generational, and that they are just trying to upgrade the species and, you know, heighten our consciousness through DNA manipulation and, you know, taking the best of humanity and the best of the alien species and combining them in the myriad of ways that they do. And I don't know that I was chosen. I just happen to be in the line of the, you know, the geneticist work. So, you know, I have hybrid children. I've seen them. I've held them, talked to them. They're real. They're half human and they're half alien. So, you know, what does that say? I think this is just what they do, and I was, I don't know, chosen. There's some good, well, there's some amazing aspects to being part of it. I know that most contactees have, you know, I have extra senses, extra, because the aliens are telepathic, and when you're with them, it activates that part of your brain, or, you know, I find myself automatically, you know, communicating with them telepathically. Now, I don't know that that's not something that we're all capable of if that part of our consciousness is activated, but so, you know, things like healing abilities and precognition, telepathy are pretty common, I think, with contactees, and so, you know, that's part of, I think, what they're doing, trying to make us a better species so we don't destroy the planet, and that was the main message that I received during all of my years of being abducted, quote-unquote. It's time to, quote-unquote, from the aliens, it's time to save Mother Earth from her inhabitants.
So,
I believe that, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just going to comment that your story, it seems like it's right at the root of what's happening with so many people out there, especially so many women, where they have these experiences, and they find them so hard to bring into an ordinary reality, that you're sharing this story, I think, is very, very important. So continue. Yeah.
Well, you know, I dropped out for 15 years, so there's a lot that's gone on that I don't know about. So I'm going to have to spend some years catching up. You know, it was probably in my destiny to return to this because it has been such a big part of my life. And I was telling my friend Melinda Leslie the other day, you know, she says, oh, you know, you're back. And I said, well, you know, you never really leave, because once you've experienced the kinds of things that we've experienced, Melinda being an abductee as well, you're just different. You can't look at the world the way you did before. The things that were priorities when I was, you know, a teenager, just dissolve after you know what's really going on in the world, in the universe. So, you know, when I tried to pretend like I was a normal person, I'd go to dinner parties and I would find myself so bored with the typical conversations that were going on in the world and the typical values and what people, you know, spent their time doing, that I ended up spending most of my time alone anyway. You can't know that your next door neighbor is being abducted or could be a hybrid or maybe an alien and go around the world like everything's okay. So, you know, I said, yeah, I'm back, but I never really left, because you can't leave that much of yourself behind. And I think it's like I said, I think it's great that we have the internet now and we can communicate with each other. And I have, you know, I talk to women about this all the time, and it's, hey, you know, it's, we're doing a good thing. we're helping. Sometimes it doesn't feel good, you know. It doesn't feel good to know that you have hybrid children that you can't see unless they decide. But when I was shown my children, they were so bright and so beautiful. You know, it gave me so much hope. And, you know, people ask me, well, what do they do with these hybrid children? Where are they? Well, I wish I knew. I don't know where they are. I've only seen them on ships. Other researchers say that they are integrating into society already. You know, they may be on other planets. They may be everywhere. My personal opinion is that if they are doing what they're doing to help save Mother Earth from her inhabitants, then there's got to be an agenda to have them here or integrate them with us. Integrate them with us. A lot of, you know, some conspiracy theorists think that they're going to take over the planet. But my experience with my children is they're amazing. They're beautiful. They have no intention of taking over the planet. So.
Well, Kim, when this experience happened to you, did you feel a difference in your vibratory rate or your energy harmonic? Was there a change in you physically that happened not only when you were in their presence but also afterwards?
Oh, well, but this brings up a very interesting story.
Great.
Okay, so I've already stated I believe that their intentions are good. I've seen my hybrid children. They're beautiful. The experience is, once I realized what was going on, I decided I didn't want it to happen anymore because it was really taking a toll on my body physically. So I decided I was going to make it stop. And a lot of people tell me that it's impossible, it can't happen, but it did. I figured out how to make the abduction stop. And oddly enough, this is one of those circles in life that you just follow, and when you get to the end of it, it's a story that's unbelievable. My best friend, who helped me illustrate my book, Daryl Anka, is a channel. He channels an entity that goes by the name Bashar. Bashar claims to be a human gray hybrid from our. Now, I've known Daryl my, you know, 15, 20 years. He's my best friend. I spent a lot of time with him. He's helped me tremendously with understanding what was going on with me. And I know Bashar very well by now. So I went to Daryl and I said, I would like to speak to Bashar. And when you have a friend who's a channeler or does something, you don't want to bother them all the time. So I never really asked for help unless it was so essential that I had to. So I went to Daryl and I said, Daryl, I said, could you bring through Bashar? I need to talk to Bashar. That week I had had an abduction by the government and an abduction by the Greys within two nights. And I was just beyond myself. I just couldn't take any more. And I said, I said, I need to talk to Bashar. Bashar came through and set me down in a chair across from him. We were sitting in two chairs facing each other. Our knees were touching. And he said, Kim, he goes, I'm going to give you a mantra. And he said, and as I do this, I want you to know that I don't know if it's going to help stop the abductions or not. He said, the medicine might be worse than the illness. He said, you might have to do this every day for the rest of your life. And I said, at that point in my life, I would have done anything to get a good night's sleep. So as he spoke to me, he gave me some words, and I felt this energy coming from, our knees were touching, I felt this energy come from Daryl's body through his knees, into my knees, into my body, and I felt the cells of my body change. And it is very new age, but I was, what's the term? I was, my vibration was heightened. And when we got up and walked to the beach, Daryl said, I feel like a different person. And I said, so do I. So I went and I did the meditation for two or three nights, and no grazing around. It was wonderful. Because I was having contact, you know, sometimes every other night. So I went a week, no contact. And I thought, oh, my goodness, I've been cured. So the next night, I didn't do the mantra. And guess who showed up? And I said, okay, well, I understand. I have to keep this mantra was keyed to this new vibration. And as long as I did this mantra, it kept that vibration high. So I continued to do it for years, and the abductions stopped altogether. So I don't know how or why it works that way, but it was interesting to me that the being that saved my life by getting my sleep back was actually a gray human hybrid, which was the same species that was abducting me. So that's the crazy universe that we live in.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that the vibratory rate was heightened, because, you know, it would seem then that the lower harmonic would tend to attract the abductors, whereas when you were able to raise your vibratory rate using the mantra, then all of that would change, and it was almost like it gave you a different energy level that maybe they didn't have access to.
Absolutely. Bashar explained it to me that I became invisible to them. As long as I maintained that vibratory rate, I would be invisible to them. So, and I'm not saying that if you're, you know, a negative person, or if you have a low vibration, you know, the grays are going to get you. It's not like that at all. It was just that I had such a high intention to be left that a miracle occurred. And when you have a great intention to create something in your life, miracles do occur. I don't think the grays go after the bad people. I don't think that at all. But that's just the way it turned out for me. I became invisible. And it's possible.
Well, did you
share anybody out there, if you're being a...
You know what? I'd like to interject right here if I could, because a lot of the people that I've worked with, and the same thing has happened. And you know what it comes down to is we have free will in this atmosphere, in this earth. And once we are aware that we have the ability to just say no, then they have to they have to listen to that and pay attention and respect it. So it's your free will of saying no.
Yes.
Just say no, people.
Right.
So
right.
Sharon,
I gave it up.
Go ahead, Kim.
How are we doing on conscious?
Oh, I said.
I just wanted.
How are we doing, Sherry?
Okay, we're doing great on time. We have 20 minutes, so until we go to the first break.
Go ahead, Kim. I just wanted to check in there and see how we're doing. Yeah.
Sure.
So you were saying that you had your doubts.
I had my doubts. I said, I know that I contributed greatly in whatever our evolution, wherever our evolution is going in regard to the hybrid. You know, the pain that I went through, the physical pain, it was terrible. But, you know, when I met my hybrid daughter, April, and saw what a magnificent thing she was, it just shifted my whole thinking. Like I said, they're not bad guys. They don't go after the bad guys. This is just part of evolution. You know, this is, you know, the hybrids are, you know, the Neanderthals were here when the humans were here. And the humans eventually kept evolving. And I think that's just what's happening over and over again.
And it's probably been happening.
There were 16 lives.
Well, I was just going to say it's been happening for very, very long time, yeah. And this this upgrading of the species, the whole concept, you know, it's been spoken about by a number of people. Alfred Weber is a very strong advocate of it. So is Don Ware. He, you know, he's a tremendous individual who has a very high regard for the upgrading of the human species. And, you know, they liken it to the upgrading of a computer where we have to get upgraded, upgrade our computers all the time. And certainly the human race can use an upgrade.
Absolutely. So, and I'll tell you, some of the contactees I've met are some of the most wonderful, loving people in the world. You know, there's just a sweetness to them and a concern for the environment and very high value. I like them a lot. And if we can, you know, spread that kind of consciousness, I wouldn't say I'd go back to being abducted again, but I'll find my ways of doing it. And, you know, the art of close encounters is, you know, my way of still participating and bringing about a heightening of consciousness, but without having to lose all of my sleep.
Yeah. Let's take a minute and talk again about who our guest is this evening. We've got Kim Carlsberg, and she is about to be able to deliver a beautiful book that contains a tremendous number of encounters that people have had, and she's gathered this work from all over. Kim, why don't you just, for those people that have just joined us, again, tell us just a bit about the work you've completed and where people can find it.
Okay. The book is called The Art of Close Encounters. It will not be available in the bookstores. I'm selling it on my website. It is in pre-sales now. Shipping date would be December 1st, but it went on to pre-sale officially day before yesterday. The Art of Close Encounters is 150 individual accounts of close encounters. And as you, the layout of the book, you open the book, the story is on the left, the art is on the right. You turn the page, you have a whole new experience. It's a four-color, beautiful, rich black pages, hardbound with a jacket. And it is, what did I say? 352 pages, 3.5 pounds. So you get two of them, you can work out.
Kim, we go into the second hour of the show, which will be coming shortly. I'd like you to discuss a little bit the actual process of you going aboard these ships, you know, something I don't know about, we call them multiverse, and about the different dimensionalities. And I know in my own case, so many people would ask, well, do you think you really physically went there? Do you think?
Yes. No, I'm saying yes, I'm listening to you. Can you hear me, Robert?
Oh, hang on a second. Wonderful Skype. I think we dropped Robert. We'll call him back and get him back on. I don't even know if he realizes it. He's just sitting over there talking still. All right, Robert, answer the phone. I can't.
All right, back again.
All right, there we go.
All right, was Kim able to hear my question?
Yes, and she answered you.
You know, you were actually breaking up as you dropped off. I did hear you ask something about the interdimensionality of the experience. Did you physically go? And I think anybody that's at all knows you physically go. I mean, we have implants and we have, you know, scars and nosebleeds and, you know, on and on. The females usually come back with, I've come back with, you know, my goodness, you know, I could feel. I had one experience where I had been implanted with a fetus and it wasn't working, it wasn't taking. And I could feel the fetus moving around inside of me, and I was very ill. I was supposed to be going to work on, you know, to Baywatch that day, and I stayed in bed all day, and, you know, finally, I thought, you know, I felt this telepathic connection to the aliens. I knew they were observing me. We all knew that there was a problem and it had to be handled quickly. And then I look up and four grays were coming through my bedroom wall, and they grabbed me and they took me back to, you know, their hospital and removed the fetus. But you come back and there's scars, there are powders. There's a lot of physical evidence if you know what to look for. We physically go, but we physically go to another dimension of reality. So I don't know, you know, how you understand something like that, but, I told people in the beginning of my book, Feel My Wildest Dreams, that it was like going underwater. You know, we're not equipped to live underwater. And you take a being from one density to another, and our consciousness just can't comprehend it. So it seems like a dream. And until you train yourself, until you've been there enough times and train yourself, like people can train themselves to hold their breath underwater, and, you know, you become more accustomed with that other environment, it seems like a dream. It's not a dream. We live in a multiverse, many, many dimensions. And, you know, these aliens just shift from one dimension to another. And when I am with them, I shift from one dimension to another. I've teleported. Just, you know, magical stuff that for them is probably, you know, it's every day. But, you know, to find myself teleporting is not common, and something I wish that I could do on demand.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely has to do with other dimensions of reality.
Kim, how did this all affect your life and your family? Were you able to share your experiences with other people that were close to you, or did you find yourself almost like an outcast with a story that was just for people to believe?
Yeah. Oh, no, I was absolutely an outcast. And I knew going in what was going to happen. I knew that I would lose my boyfriend. I knew that I would lose my career. I knew that I would be an outcast. But the price of not speaking outweighed all of that. I could not live with a secret. I had to tell the world. So I knew where I was going. And my family, my personal family, my mother, my brothers, you know, I'm the crazy California girl. You know, they're in the Midwest, and they said, oh, no, this is why people go to California. So it was, I've learned to live the rejection. At first it was rejection. At first it used to bother me. You know, now it's just, I know it's just their ignorance. So, and when it first happened, I thought it was difficult to talk about. And the more I talked about it, the more confident I became. And with that confidence, speaking about it, people took it more seriously. You know, when you're stumbling around trying to explain something like alien abduction, it's crazy enough. But when you can speak about it calmly and intelligently, it's a different thing. And it took a lot of years for me to be able to do that. And I haven't, you know, this is the first, second radio interview I've done in 15 years. So I'm very, very rusty. I'm trying to think back on all these experiences. A lot of them are in those back files in my computer yeah. brain. But
well, you certainly don't sound rusty. You sound like you're tuned up and in great shape, Kim. I'm sure
well,
you're going to be.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure you're going to be doing a lot of promotion for your book, and you're going to be doing a lot of shows and things. And we're really pleased that you came on the show with us. One of the things that you know, you've done in your life, you've had a lot of exposure to the world of Hollywood and to the, all the glamour and all that part of it. But this really brought you down to earth, I suppose. This experience.
Oh, that's funny, Robert.
Yeah. Yeah. And
no, it didn't. It didn't bring me down to earth at all. It spun me out into space.
Yeah. Well, you know, but then everybody tries to ground you. Did you notice that everybody were trying to convince you that what was happening was not really happening, and it was delusion and all that kind of thing? Did you ever have that happen to you, Kim?
Oh, all the time. Of course. That was, you know, 90% of the reaction was, okay, sure, right, okay, well, what have you been smoking? So, you know, it's... But like I said, that was 15 years ago, and a lot has changed now. So I have a feeling that when I go out to talk about this new book, the reactions are going to be a lot better than they were when I first found myself in this world, this alien world. A lot has changed in 15 years. You know, people talk about reptilians. Like, you know, when I heard my first, oh goodness, I was standing in line for a MUFON meeting in L.A. and a wonderful friend of mine was standing beside me. I won't use her name, but she was well known for reptilian relationships, and I thought she was crazy. Okay,
oh,
here
yeah.
I'm talking about being implanted with alien fetuses, and I'm thinking, here's my fellow abductee, but just because I had never heard of a reptilian alien, I'm thinking she's crazy. So I can understand how the rest of the world, you know, perceived me back then. That's okay.
You bet.
Did a lot of good work, and I've got boxes full of. Like I said, when I wrote my book, I wrote it on a Macintosh that was the latest version, 4 megabytes of RAM. I think it was like a 6-inch screen, and all it was a black and white word processor. So
I remember those
on the internet.
Yeah, I remember those as well. The great little machines, Mac,
yeah.
Wright. Sherry, how are we doing on time, Sherry?
We got about 5 more minutes till our next break.
Okay. Well, as we go into the second hour, I want you to talk a little bit about some of the plans that you have in terms of doing promotion and things for your book, and then we'll also I want to talk some more about. The new book and the whole process of pulling the whole thing together. You know, people out there, there's so many people that have these experiences and they're wondering, how do I publish? You know, how do I go about that? So you've certainly been down that trail of tears, and maybe you can spend a few minutes just giving people a little bit of advice about. If they've got a story to tell, you know, how to tell it.
Well, sure. You want to go into that now, or do you want to take a break, or?
Okay. Why don't you just talk a bit about some of the things that are coming up for you, some of the things you're planning to do before we go into the second half of the show, as far as the promoting of your book and that type of thing.
Well, you know. I've been working 24/7 for the last year on this book, and I haven't had a moment to sit down and think about promotion. Luckily, I've got some people around me who know a little bit more about it than I do, and they're giving me advice. And I have to tell you, my email is just absolutely flooded. My email box is just flooded with interview requests. I had no idea that the book was going to come across like that. So I'm going to be doing the circuit again. I look forward to traveling around to the conferences and continue radio, and I don't know that I don't see any television coming up, but who knows? I'm specifically going to do the Oz UFO conference in Kansas in March. Look for that. I'm not sure about the end of December. There's a conference in Hawaii, Robert's conference. But this is, you know, the people have just found out about the book day before yesterday, and I've already got so many opportunities that I'm going to have to spend a few days just weeding through them. So I'm looking forward to seeing the old guys, my old friends, the ones that I did the circuit with in 95. You know, I haven't seen Daryl Sims in 15 years, and, you know, I haven't seen, there's so many people that I want to be in their presence again, the ones that stuck it out all these years and they're still doing it. And so when I get to go to these conferences, I'll have the opportunity to be with my old buddies again, and that's very exciting for me.
Well, I'm sure we've got a lot of people out in the audience that will want to offer you opportunities for exposure and promotion. And why don't you give your website address again, and then we're probably rolling up into the second hour.
Okay, I will. The name of the book is The Art of Close Encounters. So you can go either to theartofcloseencounters.com or straight to my publishing site, which is closeencounters.com. And that's the only place it's going to be available. It is in pre-sale. It will be December 1st. So the first 500 copies will be autographed. So buy now and get an autographed copy before the holidays.
Yeah, it'll make a great holiday.
And I have to say real quick that there is someone in our chat room that's saying, very cool for the Black Pages. They'd like to know what the future for the paranormal publishing company is. Was that what you called it? I'm sorry if I misspoke. Close Encounters Publishing.
Yeah, okay. Close Encounters Publishing.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more when we come back from the break. We're going to play a real quick, well, it's not a real quick song. It's actually it's called I Thought About You, and it's by the Tom Morey Band. Some jazz that was laid down on us a few weeks ago by Mr. Tom Morey himself, and I just love it, so I thought that we should play it tonight. So we'll be right back with Kim and Robert, and we're just going to play you a little bit of a jazz. Be right back.
Hi, you've got to listen to ICAR, that's International Community for Alien Research, www.icar1.com. I should know, I'm Irish.
A radio program that looks at the UFO topic from a fresh perspective. Sound interesting? Then join us here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network every Friday evening at 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central for The Joyner Report, hosted by journalist and researcher Angela Joyner.
Mm-hmm. Are you a fan of the unknown?
Do you constantly watch the sky, wondering if there's something out there?
In fear of things going bump in the night?
This Week Radio brings you headfirst into the world of the paranormal with the latest news and interviews with the paranormal elite.
With hosts Jordan Klein and Nick Queen, you are sure to be consumed in the world of ghosts, UFOs, cryptozoology, conspiracy theories, and the unknown.
So check out Whispers Radio every Tuesday night, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Central. And give us a call, 1-866-514-1600.
Visit us at www.whispersradio.com.
Do you like to ask questions about everything? Would you like to escape from your proverbial box? Just leap out and explore our world in ways you've never imagined? You can have that opportunity. As we grow and expand, new features will be added, allowing you to experience radio programming at a fresh new level. I invite you to join me, November Hansen, host of Voice of the People. Together, we can expand our horizons and peer into multifaceted possibilities. This program will broadcast live Saturday evenings on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Fall is in the air. October is a magical month, highlighted at the very end by Halloween. Some would think that Halloween is the most paranormal of holidays, and while we can debate whether or not it is, we all love some laughter and fun. Bobbing for apples and trick-or-treating, pumpkins, jack-o'-lanterns, the smell of baking apples, shot corn, wreaths of wheat, hay rides, cow tipping, strange, scary monsters, goblins, ghosts, and witches of every sort, all are a part of our collective memories of this month. Stay tuned to the Paranormal Radio Network and don't miss the magic of this month.
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Celebrating Halloween all month long with special fiendish guests and topics ranging from the occult to face-to-face encounters with Bigfoot to time traveling, ghost hunting, and demonology. Ending on the 30th with our special Halloween panel telling tales of fright. Tune in Saturday, 10 p.m. Central at the Church of Mavis Radio Show, hosted by Jeffrey Pritchett and Guy Weddle, brought to you by Paranormal Radio Network. Check out our forum at mavisincarnate.com.
To UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Insanities of War.
You heard it from himself. Check it out, SafeSpaceProject.com and SafeSpaceNewsAgency.com. For Jamie Havikin, this is Safe Space, and I'm proud to be a member.
All right, and we are back with Kim, and we have Robert. And for those of you that are joining us on Pow Talk, we are streaming live, and also on Blog Talk Radio, we are streaming live feed on SafeSpaceNewsAgency.com. Just go there and check out the current live show. And you can watch live as we speak with Kim. So we are back. Kim, are you there with us? And we have Robert.
You bet. Hi, Kim. We're going into the second hour. And for those people that's not familiar with the SafeSpaceNewsAgency.com website, we're actually able to broadcast video as well as audio worldwide. And we really want to thank the Paranormal Network. And I want to take this opportunity to thank Sherry, who's a wonderful producer, and Sherry, you've had a busy week. You've just changed locations.
Oh, yeah. We've moved out to the country, and so it's been a lot of actually busy months. you have to pack, and then you have to move, and then you have to unpack.
Well, folks, we've been in the first hour, we've been having an amazing conversation with Kim Carlsberg, and she's been telling us about her experiences. And Kim, I've got a bunch of questions that have come in from the chat room. And a lot of people are interested in the hybrid children. Now,
yes, I know they are.
Yeah, for just... Go ahead, Kim.
So just a little story here. I met a woman. I went to a channeling. I went to one of Daryl's channelings recently. And I haven't gone for years because, you know, I grew up with him and I know him so well. And I know the Bashar material that I stopped attending the actual channeling sessions many, many years ago. But I was moved to go there, I guess 3 or 4 months ago. And a woman walked up to me and said, "How many hybrid children do you have?" Now, I wasn't, "Hello, nice to meet you. How many hybrid children do you have?" And I just looked into her eyes, and I knew she was a mother. And I said, "I couldn't tell you." I said, "I've met a lot of them." And she said, "Well, I have 30. And I said, "That's amazing." And I said, so this woman and I became instant friends, and it turned out she was actually the first investor to help me get the book out. And it was a funny story. You know, I lived at the beach, and I met her in L.A., and I never go to L.A. It was, you know, an hour drive, and I stay away from the city. I got a call from her one day, and she said, "Hi, this is Sharon, the one with the Eye of the Children." I said, "Hi, Sharon." And this is when I'm, you know, losing my house, and I'm trying to get the book launched, and I'm exhausted. And she said, "I'm going to be in your town tomorrow. Can we have dinner? Can I take you out to dinner?" And I said, I didn't want to say yes, but there was just something in her voice. And I said, "Sure, let's have dinner." She shows up. I'm getting phone calls. I'm, you know, not real attentive. But I'm talking to someone, and I said, "You know, I need to accumulate this much money if I'm going to try to do this self-publishing." And the next morning, she calls me, and she leaves an email, and she says, "Look at your email. It's not much, but maybe it'll help." And she actually wrote me a check for thousands of dollars. This woman I had dinner with one time. And
wow.
She said, "I'm not doing this for you." She said, "I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for the hybrid children. And this book needs to be in the world." And I just got chilled. So, yes.
That's a wonderful story.
Yes. And she is just such an incredible woman. And there are probably millions of, you know, women like her out there. And I thought, okay, well, she said, "I'm going to take a trip. I'm going to Illinois because I'm looking for land for the hybrid children to come visit. And I said, that's interesting. I said, because, Robert, you're going to love this. I bought land in Snowflake, Arizona, 15 years ago with six other abductees. We have adjoining 40-acre parcels, checkerboarded with 40-acre parcels. So that gives us, I think we have maybe 400 acres of virgin land. And when we bought it, we didn't know why we bought it. But it was one of those things that just had to happen. So who knows? You know, what, you live up there, and there's a lot of activity up there. The night that I bought that property, I was really sick. I got my girlfriend. We jumped on the plane. A friend of mine called and said, listen, I've got a guy who's going to hold 640-acre parcels for 1 week, and I guaranteed him that I could get them sold. And so we jumped on a plane, went to Snowflake, saw the land. I'm in the back seat of the car. I'm sick. I can't even sit up. I'm so sick. I'm throwing up. I mean, the guy opens the door, and I look out at the land, and I said, no, I don't. No, this is not right. He said, okay, good, because there's one other parcel I want to show you. So we get there. He opens the door. My girlfriend's in the front seat. I look out over the land, and that was it. I knew it. I said, this is it. We'll buy it. So we bought it, and all this time, I've spent maybe two or three nights there. I cannot sleep there. It's a vortex. Every time I've tried to sleep there, there's so much interdimensional activity, I cannot sleep. And I would suspect that that would be one of the places that the hybrid children would find it easy to visit. And these communities that you're talking about, that I heard in the little advertisement during the break, reminded me of that. So, it's a beautiful, beautiful area. It's got so much going on as far as ET activity. The night that I bought it, my girlfriend said, we have to go, she's an abductee, she says, we have to go out there at night. We have to see the land at night. I said, okay, I'm sick, but we'll go if you want to see it at night. We had three sightings that night.
Wow.
So that was sort of the... And I'm with the real estate agent, and I looked at this guy, and I said, do you see what we're seeing? And he said, yeah. And I said, have you seen this before? And he said, yeah. And I said, how many times? Oh, about a dozen. Okay, that was one craft. The car, and this was in the winter. The car broke down. We're stuck in the mud. It was early winter. We're stuck in the mud, so we're waiting for his son comes over. I looked at him and I said, because, you know, people can be together and there'll be a group of people and half will see the craft and half won't, for whatever reason. It sounds like we're in a windy area, huh?
Yeah, I think Sherry's got the windstorm going there. We're actually pretty good.
Okay, as long as you can hear me, it sounds like I'm in a wind tunnel.
No, I'm actually muted. But Joe turned up the volume because there were some people saying that they couldn't hear Kim.
Okay. Sometimes it's hard when it's
a cell phone.
Yeah, there you go. Kim, the area that you're talking about, for those people that aren't familiar with it, is up here in what we call the White Mountains of Arizona. And it's also what we call the safe space safety zone, because historically, we're very, very close to the Second Mesa, which is the home of the Hopi. And then we're also very close to where the Navajo and the Apache people live. And, of course, their cultures are just ripped with the legends and the stories that have been passed down for countless generations about the fact that the keepers of the earth will survive and be safe if we face these cataclysmic times that so many, many people are predicting. And we just encourage people, you know, to come up and take a look for themselves. As you indicated, there's a lot of beautiful land up here. And we feel it's one of the best places in the world to be, especially here in the United States. So check it out, folks.
Yeah.
If if you've got this,
it's very magical.
Yeah, and like you say, there's just so many people that do have experiences when they come here. And I'm blessed that I live up here. And as I look at what's happening in the world, and I don't want to drift too far away from the topic that people have asked about, because there's a tremendous amount of interest in what you're telling us, Kim. But just to kind of conclude that, we're advising everybody that that as we look to the future, we may be challenged by economic hard times that get even much worse than we're seeing now. We advise people to prepare themselves to make sure they've got a good food supply and a water supply, and to make sure that they have warm clothing and be prepared, because if things do happen and things do change, then we're going to be having to take care of ourselves. And we just want everyone to know that you can be prepared and you know, take it seriously, because every day we move closer to a time when many, many people, whether they're channels or prophets or people that just have current information, are saying that we are going to be, we're going to be challenged, let's put it that way, on a level most of us have never experienced before. So, Kim, let's go back to some of the questions. On the subject of the hybrid...
Can I finish my story quickly?
Sure, Robert, absolutely.
Robert, I just have to throw this in because it's so much fun. And it brought up another thing I wanted to mention. So we had three sightings that night, and we bought the land. And the land is very, very sacred to us. And we don't know, you know, why we were guided to buy it, but we hold it in our hearts, and we know that there's a purpose for the land, whether it's a community when things do get bad, or whether it's a place that the hybrid children can land, or you know, maybe all of the above. But the fun part of it was there were no roads yet. They were only dirt roads, and they weren't named. So every one of us who bought a parcel got to name our road. All of the roads are named after the aliens. So mine is Zeta Reticuli Lane. We have Orion Avenue, Pleiades, you know, this, that, or the other. So it was very cute. We have all of our alien ancestors, with their names on our street signs. So, and I wanted to say one other thing about, you know, when times might get bad, when I was doing the book, it was I let people know about it from the very beginning online on Facebook, and I was contacted by a man who's a producer in San Diego, and his story is in my book, but he was at a party, business party, and he was contacted by an alien in this group of people. He reached out he walked into the room, and this alien was speaking to this group of people, a Pleiadian, a young, good-looking humanoid alien. No one knew he was an alien except for this guy that walked in the door. And so this guy was speaking to this group of people, and this guy became my friend, so I'll call him my friend. When my friend walked in the door, this being, this entity, this ET, spoke to him telepathically and said, "I know your girlfriend didn't want you to come here tonight, but there's a good reason. You were meant to be here." And it completely freaked him out. He left the party, came back at the end when everybody had left except for this extremely beautiful, you know, being, and he reached out and he said, "You spoke to me telepathically, didn't you? That happened, didn't it?" He said, "It absolutely did." He goes, "You just happen to be one of the lucky ones that can hear." And he said he reached out and grabbed his hand, and when he did, it took him through like this real-time, real-life video of what the Earth may go through. And he said there were, you know, winds and fires and earthquakes. It was, you know, almost like, you know, Revelation, biblical, the damage that was being done to the Earth. And he said he was told to go to the high desert. And when I spoke to him, I said, "That's funny." I said, "Because 15 years ago, I bought land in the high desert." And he said, "Well, you keep that land and you get that land ready." So anyway, so that was that. And
well, that's,
back to the question.
Oh, no, that's an amazing part of it, because so often we get engaged in these conversations and we hear all of these interesting and informing things, but we still live in this very real world, and we still have to contend and cope with the reality of what is, shall we say, the possible future. And I like to tell people that we have the ability, we have free will, we have the ability to change this destiny that's been written or whatever it is, and we don't have to experience that, and we don't have to be freaked out and frightened by it, but we do have to be prepared. And I appreciate you sharing that story, for sure. Well, okay, so we're at the top of the hour with Kim, and in the earlier portion of the broadcast, we were talking about some of her experiences with grays. What were the grays like, Kim? Were they large grays, small grays? You know, we hear so many of the different varieties. Could you describe what they appeared to you as?
Okay, when I was pushed through the door into this room, this large room, on my first conscious abduction, it was filled with what I called them anorexic Pillsbury Doughboys. These little tiny 3.5-foot beings running all over the place, tons of them. And then there were a couple that were a little bit taller and probably my height. You know, I remember when the gray walked in front of me and slapped me on the back of the neck. We were eye to eye. So 3.5 feet, 5 feet. I've seen a gray, I call him a big nose gray, had a huge nose, slit eyes, more like a reptilian eye, green golden eye with a slit, very, very tall, but we were floating, so I can't tell you exactly how tall. I've seen light beams, I've seen the hybrids, I saw entities that I thought were, they gave off the energy of being the alien's pets. They looked like little mounds of dough on the floor, really formless, but they had consciousness, and they were sweet. They had this wonderful energy that they were projecting. So I thought, oh, my God, this is like my puppy sitting on the floor. I had an experience with a shapeshifter. It was absolutely incredible. I've seen and had experiences not so desirable with the mantis. And I've also heard people say that they've had experiences with the mantis that were wonderful and spiritual and enlightening. So I've seen a lot of beings. Like I said, the grays, you know, a couple different sizes. They're definitely like a hive mind. You can tell when one moves, they all move. The small ones, that is. And one thing I wanted to say about the grays, the people always say they don't have emotions. And that is absolutely not true. I've experienced the strongest emotion with the gray, and that was because I accidentally, during an abduction, stuck my thumb into his mouth. And that is when I knew he was not a robot. You know, sometimes they say they're robotic. They're not real. The inside of his mouth was wet. And it was moist and it was warm. And I felt the upper palate of his mouth with my tongue, and it felt just like sticking my tongue in my own my thumb in my own mouth. It was that visceral. And at that moment, we connected spiritually, and this love, this overwhelming love, went through me, and it was like an accident. So I know they have emotion. They just don't experience it or share it or display it the way that we do. And it takes something very extreme to get it out of them. I know that when I was shown my first hybrid children, these little grays brought me into a room, and they set me on the floor, and they wouldn't let me get up. And there was a door on the other side of the room, and that door opened, and these little grays walked in with this little girl about 2 years old, big blue eyes and blonde hair, and they looked at me, and I could feel this anticipation, this pride, this look, isn't she beautiful? And they literally said, isn't she a beautiful baby? And I've heard that they say that a lot, actually. But I felt the energy of pride and caring, and so it's not true. They're not robots. They are conscious entities, and they do have emotion. It's just not constructed and displayed the way ours is. In my
opinion. That's the first account I've heard of anyone that's had that kind of an experience, Kim. That's really, really interesting. Kim, were you allowed to name your children? Did they ask you to name them?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know. I just know their names. I don't know how they came about. They all start with A's. So Bashar was during a channeling, and he said, and because most of the women in the channeling had hybrid children, and most of the children's names began with A. And so we were saying, you know, what's up with that? And he said, well, it was the first generation. So they were named with A's. So pretty simple.
Yeah.
The A-law, I suppose.
Yeah. Kim, what kind of clothes did they wear? How were they clothed?
I didn't notice clothing. If anything, it would have been a form-fitting bodysuit. I did notice over and over again an emblem that looked like an A. A simple block A with the horizontal line extending beyond the two lines of the A. So as far as clothing, don't recall. I know that the hybrid woman in my first experience was wearing just a gauze knife with no shape to it. She had very patchy hair. I thought my first inclination was this is a woman who's going through radiation treatment for cancer, because that's what it looked like. Just, you know, patches of hair, although it was long, down to her shoulders. Other than that, they're not much into fashion.
Yeah, right. Could you tell us that the children were they girls, or was there a mixture of girls and boys?
I have been taken to nurseries with very, very small children. I've seen rooms that are, I was taken to a room with, like a nursery in a hospital, with babies in little baskets, okay? And I don't know if they were male or female. I've been taken to rooms where they keep the children in the incubation tanks full of water. I believe that there were males. I believe I remember seeing male children in these tanks. I do not personally have memories of being introduced to male children of my own. But that doesn't mean anything. That was just, I had female children.
Yeah. Well, it's curious that so many of them are female. And of course, that's probably because of part of the plan for the repopulation. Have you got a sense that for the integration of these hybrid children into our culture, have you seen any evidence of that occurring? You touched on that a little bit earlier, but
Yeah, no, you know, I don't know. I've read so many things, and I hear theories, and, you know, I don't know what to believe. I just know my own experience, and I know that with the urgency of the program, that they are very, very seriously concerned about the planet. And so I just have to guess that they plan to be here, plan to put them here. Now, I've heard other people's accounts, and I've heard that people are abducted, and they're set in front of a screen, and that screen shows, a party of aliens, a party somewhere, and they said, can you tell the aliens from the humans? And the abductees say no. And so they say, well, that's good. So it looks like they're, if you believe that story, then that they would want to be integrating with us without everybody knowing about it in a way that's not completely disruptive to the entire society. You know, I've heard that there are hybrids here, that abductees are taken to them, and they have to teach them how to shop, or, what kind of foods to eat, how to choose food. But, you know, things that are so normal to us that to a hybrid alien sit down on this planet, they would have to be learned how to arrange furniture, for example. So I've heard a lot of different stories. I know that the hybrid children are being created for a reason, and we're part of it. Undeniable.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Oh, my electricity just flashed. They're communicating.
Yeah, there you go. I want to take this opportunity and thank all of our listeners, and especially to say hello to Sean and Allie, who are in the chat and are listening, and to all the people out there that have tuned into the show here on the Paranormal Network, and also on Blog Talk, as well as on the SafeSpaceNewsAgency.com website, where we're actually streaming video. And to remind you that the shows are archived and will be playing on the Safe Space News Agency Network. And they're also archived, I believe, on Blog Talk as well as on the Paranormal Network. So pass them around out there and be sure and check out Kim's new book. Kim, it's one of those things that people want to know about the process of going through self-publishing. Why don't you spend just a couple of minutes and give people some hints there and give them a recommendation from what you've learned with all your experience?
Don't do it. If you have friends and family, don't even think about it. It is absolutely, the most this book is the most difficult thing I've ever done. Now, this is a specific type of book. My first book wasn't a big deal. I didn't self-publish, but the creation of it was simple because it was my story straight out. You know, and I think if you have your own story and it's enough to fill a book, and it's not an art book, I believe it would probably be pretty simple these days to self-publish. The type of book that I chose to do, no one should ever do. You can imagine I've got 150 contributors, thousands of emails, trying to make everybody happy, trying to assure that their story is represented, in the highest manner possible, the highest quality and the highest integrity, and making sure that every storyline is correct and the intention behind their story is understood. And most people who send art, they're not authors. I don't consider myself an author. I author a book, but I'm not a writer, really. So, you know, we had to go over the stories time and time again to make sure they made sense and they were, you know, comprehensive. And so this type of a book was quite challenging. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody to do a compilation book. It's very, very difficult. But, you know, you have to follow your heart. And if your heart says to do it, do it. And this is a good time to plug my next book. May as well do that, huh?
Yeah.
I plan to do The Art of Close Encounters 2. So if you have a story and it's not enough to fill a book, but it's enough to fill a page, then by all means, get a hold of me and I can include it in the next volume of The Art of Close Encounters. And yeah, that'll make it easy on you.
Yeah. Well, it sure sounds like you haven't lost your ambition on the task of doing this book. Did you feel like it was a mission, Kim? Did you feel like this was something that you were driven to do, or did you just think this would be a fun thing to do?
Are you inside of my brain reading my mind? I'm so driven to do this that I did not leave my computer for a year. I would work all night long. I would see the sun come up. I would get so mad at the sun for coming up because that meant I had to go to sleep for an hour or two. And I would get back up and I would do it over and over and over again. And I mean, I lived in my pajamas for a year. I mean, I just did not leave the computer. It had to be done. The book had to be birthed. And I really believe, you know, I had to be the person to do it because I have a particular skill. Just enough of the particular skills to pull it off. I had enough writing skills, enough artistic skills, enough alien encounters that I could do this. And I was chosen to do it. And that's just how it happened. I mean, I woke up one morning and I said, this is it. It's got to be done. And I didn't stop. And I haven't stopped. And I haven't had a day off, an hour off, in a year, and it's just, and I'm looking at the interviews that are waiting in my inbox, and I'm saying, okay, but at least now this is fun. This is the most fun I had, because the pressure of the book, you know, being printed, now that it's printed, that was an enormous accomplishment, and now it's going to be here, and I can have fun, I can talk to people, I can share the book, and it'll be time-consuming, but it won't be the kind of grueling, you know, birthing that I had to go through.
Well, for those people that have never experienced the encounter, you know, it's difficult to relate the experience of this energy that seems to just take us over. And, you know, you throw your life aside, you throw all caution to the wind, and people think, you know, you're absolutely out of your mind. You know, you don't have a life anymore. You do things that are unbelievable. You take risks, and the next thing you know, your friends change, your life changes, your circumstances changes, and yet you continue. And I just admire and respect you so much for doing it. And I think it's an amazing feat that you've accomplished. The last book, like you've spoken about, I think Wendell Stevens did one a number of years ago that was based on the Billy Meyer thing, and I know that it's a collector's item, and people out there should get Kim's book because it certainly will become, you know, it will become the one to have, especially with the quality she's put into it. Why don't...
I don't want to, you know, I get to brag because I didn't do the art. I did some of the art. So I can say how amazingly stunning the book is because of the contributors.
So, you know, it's not an egotistical statement. It's you know, the contributors have were just, they're wonderful. I love every single one of them. You know, we've become such good friends, and I have so much respect for their bravery. And you know, when I started this, like I said in the intro, I thought it would be like pulling teeth. Just the opposite. People were so gracious and willing and wanting to share their stories. And that part of it, having people contribute was the easy part. It was just, you know, the whole assemblage was very challenging.
Can I interject for just a second? There is an interesting conversation going on over in Pal Talk. Apparently earlier in the broadcast, you said something and mentioned something about sticking your finger in one of the aliens' mouth. Or could we clear up whatever,
yes,
if you can remember what it is that you said, because they're having a debate in the chat room as to what exactly you did.
Sure. That was when I was being observed. I had been implanted with a fetus, and there were problems, and I was in bed. I'd been in bed all day. I had a telepathic link up with them all day. I knew they were watching me, and I knew that the fetus was going to die. It was moving around inside of me. It was just the scariest thing. And I just realized that at one moment, it's like they knew. They had to come and get me at that moment and try to save that fetus. They came, four of them came through the walls of my bedroom, two to my head, two to my feet, and the on my left got really, really close to my face. That's what they do. They put their eyes right to your eyes, and they control you that way. And so this being was trying to get to me, and our faces were literally touching, and I just instinctively took my hand and I slipped it between his face and my face and trying to push him away. And as I did, my thumb slipped into his mouth. And then that's when I felt the wet, warm upper palate. And that's when this explosion of love surged through me. And at first I thought, where is this coming from and why? But it was just that we had made this kind of our connection, and it allowed this being to express emotion to me. And then they took me away and took the fetus, and I don't know if the fetus died or not. Are you still there?
Oh, absolutely.
Hello?
Okay, yeah, we're still here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Right, now we're just...
Did that answer the question, Kim?
I'm not sure what that has to do with the tongue and the finger that they're discussing in the chat room, but yes, that is what they were talking about, so... There you have
it. Okay.
in the assortment of different materials that were sent to you, you said there were a variety of different extraterrestrials or entities or ETs or aliens. Can you tell us and tell the audience what your take is on who's visiting this planet? I mean, what's really going on here from the standpoint of alien cultures and the interaction with our planet?
Isn't that the million-dollar question? You know, who was the guy in the government who said that we have documented 257 different species? Do you know who I'm talking about? He's on Richard, not Richard, Greer. Who am I saying? Greer.
Greer, okay. Dr. Michael Sala has made a lot of comments to the different ones. Uh-huh. But go ahead.
He was on a news conference with Dr. Greer. This man worked for our government, and he was one of the people who were first on the scene in case of a crash or whatever. And he said that our government had documented 257 something around there, different species. So if our government has documented that many, you know, not to insult any government workers, but I'm sure they have their limitations as well. I just know of general species. And of those general species, I have seen crossbreeding of all of them. So that leaves a lot. So if you want to call, like right now I'm looking at the book, and I was looking at a gray alien with scales. Okay, so this gray alien is half reptilian. It has the reptilian eyes, gold eyes with the slit. But it's definitely a gray. So do you call that another species? Or is that just, that's a hybrid of a gray and a reptilian? I don't think there's any way to count. How would we know? Unless we just keep researching and keep compiling. But
yeah,
there's enough to keep it interesting, that's for sure.
So, you know, many people have talked about the different variety of grays, and that some of them are very friendly, and then others, you know, a lot of talk is now coming out about Dulce. Have you followed at all some of the latest information that's occurred on the Dulce situation? And
I have not.
Well, there.
What
we're being told is that early in the 1940s, during a time when the United States was building an underground base at Dulce, a tunnel was uncovered, and in that tunnel were a group of large grays that had been on the planet for a very, very long time, possibly 250,000 years or longer, and that they, in fact, had been over the years, you know, they were basically night dwellers, but they had had the encounters, and they had abducted people, and they had been responsible for a lot of the genetic manipulation, the genetic changes that the human species has gone through over the countless centuries since their involvement. And I guess the reports are that there actually was a running gun battle between the people that were there in the tunnels and the Greys themselves. And that since that time, the United States government has known about this, and in fact, the story, there's a new book out by Anthony Sanchez, who will be our guest next Monday evening, called UFO Highway, and it's quite a groundbreaking book, and it dwells into this whole mystery of who these large grays are. And of course, you know, there's probably many, many species of grays. And of course, then there's the reptilian side of the equation as well. But in your dealings, you're no longer being contacted, or are you?
So this goes back to the idea of the high vibration, right? So
right.
During the last year, I have undergone what, you know, half the country has undergone, which is financial collapse. And that, you know, put me into quite a depression. And I've been taking care of myself the way I should, you know, like I said, the obsessive compulsive get the book done situation, along with losing my, you know, my life's savings and my investments. I got really down. And there were several times that they tried to get me again. And as soon as that happened, I went back to doing my mantra. I haven't done the mantra in years. You know, I did the mantra for a few years, and it got my vibration up, and I went on with my life, and I haven't had it until this last year. And
They try on occasion when I'm really worn out and depressed, they'll try to sneak in. And just recently, I had a little bit of an experience. You know, the paralysis, the number one indicator is they try to paralyze you, you know, because before they take you. So I felt the paralysis start to come over me, and I know how to break the paralysis. And as I did, I was so mad that they were still trying to get me that I turned around, and there was this little gray one there. You know, and I'm not really sure if it was a gray because the neck was so long. I'd never seen a neck this long, but it looked like a gray, a little bit smaller head, very long neck, standing beside my bed, and I just turned and I reached and I grabbed his neck with both hands and squeezed as hard as I could squeeze, and it was like my hands were going through Silly Putty, and he disappeared.
Boy, well, so, at least you know how to handle that kind of a situation. Sherry, give us a time check, if you would, please.
Oh, yeah. We have 5 minutes left.
Okay. Kim, I want you to get a chance to tell the audience again how to locate your book. And I want to tell everybody out there, this is a chance to have a really high-quality book that reflects so many of different encounters and different abduction experiences, but there's a good side of the equation as well, isn't there, Kim?
Absolutely. You know, it just shows that we live in a real world, a real universe. It's the yin and yang of life. There's the good and the bad and everything in between, and I think it's mostly good. I think that the experiences that people have, like I had, that are terrifying are just because we don't understand, and I don't think the intentions of the grays are to hurt anyone. They're just trying to create hybrid species. So, you know, it's what they do. Maybe it's how we got here. And I was just thinking when you were talking about the 12 grays living underground. Sounds very much like the event, doesn't it?
Yeah.
A group of
beings
that are on the planet.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
have you watched it? Have you...
I've been watching that, and I have to say that art imitates life. That's all I'm going to say. Because it's too funny the way everything is happening in that, and the disclosure and everything that we're talking about and wanting is expressed in that movie, or that
right.
show. So everyone should check that out if they haven't. It's called The Event. So I'm here in Texas on Monday night, so I usually watch it on Hulu. So very cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't watched TV. Are we going?
I want just a second. Go ahead. Finish your sentence.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kim. Give your website one more time here before we wrap up.
Oh. Okay. I will. My website is closeencounterspublishing.com. The name of the book is The Art of Close Encounters. You can also get to it by theartofcloseencounters.com. Not to make it complicated, but just remember the name of the .com on the end and you can find it. I'm in pre-sales for the next month. The first 500 books will be autographed. Ship date will be December 1st, so it'll be a nice thing to have under, you know, the Hanukkah or Christmas tree or the Buddha tree. So, what is that?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being our guest this evening. See how fast the time went? And we want to tell everybody that we want to thank you for tuning in to the Safe Space News Agency.com network and the Paranormal Network and Blog Talk. And be sure and catch the news update that I do weekly for the Paranormal News Network. And also, next week, we're going to be having Anthony Sanchez, author of the UFO Highway, a very new and very exciting book that has some real revelations in it. So, Sherry, it's how much time we got left?
All right, we're down to... Yeah, we're...
No, this is...
Go ahead, 2 minutes
this
remaining.
This is the year for UFO books.
Yeah. Well, but yours stands out, Kim. Yours stands out. We want to just tell everybody this is a great Christmas gift as well. Thank you, Kim, for sharing your experiences with us. That it's been a very interesting, informing evening with you. And,
well, thank you for inviting me, and it's been fun. And, you know, I'll run into you up there in the White Mountains one of these days.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you come up and visit and stay.
90 seconds.
And once again, folks, be sure and be prepared. Make sure that you've got a bit of a food supply, a water supply. Some of the information that's coming to me is that we're going to have a very large economic conference in Europe within the next few weeks. I've been told there's going to be an earth-shaking event happening in this around the
8th. 60 seconds.
So be prepared for lots of change. Get ready to take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your families, and continue to stay tuned to the SafeSpaceNewsAgency.com for updates. And Sherry, thank you very much for the great job tonight.
Oh, great. Thank you. It's been fun. And everyone, thank you for listening to us in the chat room. Thanks for coming and hanging out with us on these Monday nights. And be sure and come back next Monday. We'll be right here at the same time, same place. And we appreciate everyone who also listens to us in the archives and on iTunes. You can download us and take us with you. So we'll see you guys next time.
I think it's time to open the books on the question of...